Hey everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Frank About Health. If you recall last week, I was recovering from a lessons learned episode that has its way into the archives of anyone's memory who saw it. But most importantly, I had touched upon that the episodes I did not fully go into in discussion were those involving both Danielle Swanson and Jeffrey Dimitrak, which were the epilepsy-oriented programming. And that's because for the next 2 weeks, we're going to have our monthly episode of epilepsy and its comorbidity in this particular episode, post-traumatic epilepsy. But next Thursday, we're going to have a wrap-up with some interesting announcements of where Frank About Health is taking the whole epilepsy disorder into a much more live event space going forward into the spring and summer. Now, that all being said, we have already touched upon epilepsy and its alternative treatments. We have talked about narcissism and its relationship with epilepsy and how epilepsy are perfect targets for narcissistic abuse. And today, we're going to talk about a type of epilepsy which more than likely is due to either traumatic brain injury or some other kind of traumatic issue or disorder that ended up triggering seizures later in life. So that's something that we brought Jeff and Danny to discuss from their own experiences, as well as a surprise guest that we're not sure when he's going to arrive, but we'll also let him share his story and experience with post-traumatic epilepsy. Now, that being said, I first must issue my disclaimer before I reintroduce Danny and Jeff. And that is, if you are an epileptic patient currently under medicational treatment or undergoing any other kinds of alternative treatments, just remember that any of the information that is shared on today's episode is not for you to be taken with advice or direction. It is meant to be information or food for thought for you to consult with your primary care physician and or neurologist so that you can determine if what you learned today is useful and can help you in your current treatment protocol. Therefore, the information today is not the views of talkradio.nyc or Frank About Health, or rather, again, just information for conversation that we hope you'll learn a lot from today. Okay, that all being said, Danny and Jeff, welcome back to Frank About Health. And everyone, just also be aware, this is March is Brain Awareness Month, or Brain Injury Awareness Month. And so we thought this would be a fitting episode of epilepsy-oriented episode to kind of pay a discussion and an understanding of how brain injuries can sometimes contribute to seizures. So that all being said, welcome back to both of you.
Thank you, Frank. welcome to you.
Okay. I do see here that I should qualify the definition of post-traumatic epilepsy. First of all, let's look at the, what's the famous word, nomenclature? You know, a person with post-traumatic epilepsy is not necessarily an epileptic. Okay, how so? Well, according to the definitions of what post-traumatic epilepsy is, both from the medical professionals as well as individuals that suffer from it, is that it depends upon the type of head injury you may have sustained earlier in life. Risk factors include when a person has a brain contusion, an intracerebral hematoma, or you are older than 65. Typically, people that are born with epilepsy or develop it naturally is usually in their puberty years. So if it happens later in life, one can assume that it is a post-traumatic result of some other issue.
Well, you're more at risk if you're over 65, you know, because of stroke or something like that.
Correct, correct. And of course, God forbid there's anything like a like brain tumors or anything requiring surgical intervention, sometimes that could, in its recovery process, trigger seizure disorder. Okay, seizures during the first week after traumatic brain injury are considered to be provoked by the head injury and known as early post-traumatic epilepsy. A new active brain injury, such as head trauma, is one of the main causes of epilepsy, which is about 20 to 30% of the population suffering from seizures. And D, people with intractable epilepsy and their risk of consistent head injuries during a seizure, which is pretty much, I know I have suffered from post-traumatic partial seizures due to having a generalized seizure and banging my head repeatedly and creating a brain lesion. So I can identify with that. And at the same time, the question one can ask is, does a person's seizures change over time because of the head injuries from their seizures? And I think, Jeff, you can speak to more of that. So that's the general overview of post-traumatic epilepsy versus overall epilepsy. But I think statistically, we're saying that the population of those suffering from seizures are 20% non-epileptic patients, correct?
Well, yeah, and epilepsy has no identifiable cause in about half the people with the condition. In the other half, it may be traced to various factors like genetic influence or a brain infection like encephalitis or now COVID, of course. And when you're younger, it might be a high fever or febrile seizures. And when you're a young child, you might have heard of that term. And certain medications sometimes might be the cause of seizures. And when I was doing some reading about the cause of TBI, because this is a Brain Injury Awareness Month, and many people are spreading awareness because of their brain injuries this month. So the doctors many times have to rule out alcohol misuse because, you know, because their drunkenness many times it will lead to a fall and then hence a head injury. And so epilepsy is a condition where there is unusual electrical activity and in the brain causes people to pass out, shake, or unusual behaviors, and we call this having a seizure. And head injuries also put people at risk for things like concussions, dizziness, vertigo, migraines, headaches. People who are at risk for head injuries are people with intractable epilepsy and people having seizures all the time, but they are also people that are playing sports or risk takers like mountain climbers or deep sea divers or people of that nature. A good percentage of epilepsy cases are people that have head injuries and maybe people that are veterans, you know, that have also had an injury because they had it while they were doing their duty as a veteran. And it could be caused by scarring on the brain. And this may mean an individual begins to start having epileptic seizures. So that wasn't the case for me. I started having it when I was a child, but I also had many other causes so it could not be traced to the brain injury as the direct cause or the individual cause for my epilepsy. So,
Okay. And so, Danny, what would you classify? I mean, I know you raised your hand when we talked about unexplainable causes for your history with epilepsy.
Jeff had mentioned intractable epilepsy and, you know, basically the kind where they don't know why you have epilepsy. And that is me. They tried to figure out, they thought, oh, maybe it's genetic because I do have, I think it's one of my grandmother's aunts had epilepsy. It's pretty severe, but they figured out it wasn't that for me. I've never had any like brain trauma or injuries or anything. So it's not that. They basically ruled everything out and they're just like, yeah, we don't know. So when he was talking about that kind of, the kind that you can't figure out why it is, I was just like, oh, that's me.
All right. No, I kind of like am the umbrella between the two of you. I developed it. My very first seizure was when I was 16. I was in a high school classroom studying all night long for a complicated calculus exam. and I had no sleep, sleep deprivation, trigger number one. At the same time, the stress of the test itself was trigger number two. And I had this ongoing sense, you know what they call those auras, but not just the visual ones, the ones where you feel like a sense of nausea in your stomach, or you just feel like you have a gravitational pull that's making you walk slower than normal, or you have what these kind of out-of-body senses, like, am I really here? You know, and then all of a sudden, I remember the very moment the seizure occurred, I was looking at the blackboard. It was a history class, and we were looking at, my God, when I was 16, it was 1984, I believe. So it was the 1984 presidential election between, I forget who was running at that time, but, Reagan was one of them. But the point of the matter is, the blackboard looked like it broke in half. And the next thing I had heard when I woke up in the emergency room was that I fell out of my chair. People thought a dictionary had fallen or a series of books. And I just went into the convulsion and everything else. And I remember the day they diagnosed it. And again, the 80s, it was still considered a stigma to be known as an epileptic. So I remember when the I don't know if it was a nurse or the doctor that said, oh, epilepsy. And I go, oh, no, not at all. No way. Not happening. I was exhausted from no sleep, blah, blah, blah. I went through a whole denial period until 1987 when taking a bath, Christmas time, I almost drowned in my own bathtub. And that was when they said, you're an epileptic, you're taking Dilantin, or you would have been dead tonight. And I went, okay. All right. But we're now being told 2 minutes to break. The bottom line is that I had learned earlier in my life that I basically was destined to have it, because after meeting a lot of different doctors and finally landing with the one that I've been seeing since the 90s over at NYU Langone Comprehensive Epilepsy Center, he identified it as genetic epilepsy, genetic grand mal seizures. And well, so
it's also interesting that you mentioned nerve cells. Well, you mentioned nausea. There's a lot of nerve cells in your stomach, and a lot of people will say that it was due to something that they ate, or, you know, they might have had food poisoning, or there's got to be a relationship between the stomach and the brain. And there is a lot of nerve cells and a lot of there's a big connection between the epilepsy and the stomach. Yeah. So.
Right. Cause there's all the electrical communication that's also misfiring throughout the entire CNS, now central nervous system. Mm-hmm. All right. When we return, we're going to get more of Danny's particular story in relation to post-traumatic epilepsy, especially in the area of PTSD oriented issues that might be in the workplace or even just from having gone through embarrassing experiences. So please stay tuned as we're talking about post-traumatic epilepsy on this episode of Frank About Health on talkradio.nyc, on our Facebook channel, on our YouTube channel, on our LinkedIn channel, and on Twitter. So please stay tuned.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you on edge? Hey, we live in challenging, edgy times, so let's lean in. I'm Sandra Bargeman, the host of The Edge of Every Day, which airs each Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live with me and my friends and colleagues as we share stories and perspectives about pushing boundaries and exploring our rough edges. That's The Edge of Every Day on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back. So in the first segment, we spoke about the difference between genetic epilepsy and post-traumatic epilepsy. And today's episode is devoted primarily to post-traumatic, but we are giving a general overview of what epilepsy is. As Jeff had mentioned, all the details, including the example of how the central nervous system within the stomach is connected to the brain activity, warning you that a seizure is coming. Aside from the auras and the medications and other aspects of epilepsy, the one thing to realize is that when dealing with typical epilepsy, the type that is diagnosed as epilepsy, it can happen at different stages in life, typically in the younger years. There have been stories of, diagnoses of grand mal, petit mal, at the same time people saying juvenile myoclonic, Lennox-Gastaut syndrome. All of these are basic neurological terminology that I don't think either one of us are qualified as non-medical practitioners to go into detail. So if you need information on that, I would recommend looking at the Epilepsy Foundation website, or even looking at just different information that is available on Wikipedia about the various types of epilepsy. So now as we go into the post-traumatic type, which is what we're going to devote the rest of the show to, I want Danielle to talk about her epilepsy through the workplace, because it's not typically a post-traumatic type of event, but the workplace has a different culture, as we described on previous episodes, that can have stress triggers, sometimes beyond our control, and as such, influence seizure activity, even if the individual has been fully medicated and is probably also resolved in most of the primal symptoms that they've had when they were first diagnosed. So, Danny, I just thought you'd start to share any one particular moment you might recall that people, the listeners and viewers, could learn from.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the intro. talking about kind of brain injuries and all this in regards to epilepsy, I am kind of just sitting here during the break reflecting, and I think there's something to be said for anyone who has epilepsy that seizures can happen anywhere, anytime, kind of like you said. And there's two kind of main ones that are coming to my mind right now. So, I would say probably age 22 and younger, it wasn't really a big deal for me. But I do remember one time I was working in a yoga studio, and oddly enough, it was a very like intensive, high pressure financially to get like enough members and make enough money and all this. And that was very stressful for me. I'm not a super salesy person, but I do remember one time I'm going out doing what I wanted to do for that. And I'm passing out flyers. Oh, come to the yoga studio. And excuse me.
It's all right.
That was a weird inhale. I was passing by a Whole Foods. That's what I do remember. And I felt a seizure coming on. So I just sat next to the outside edge of this Whole Foods. And it was in a city, Cambridge, if you're familiar with it, in Massachusetts. There's a lot of people. There's enough people. So I knew.
There's a lot of people.
Yeah, there's a lot of people. I sat down.
It's where Harvard is.
Right. Yes. So I expected like basically good behavior. Let me put it that way. But I sat down, I had the seizure, and I didn't go unconscious for this one, but I saw people look down at me and kind of like scoot away, like they thought I was on drugs or something. No one offered to help me. No one stopped to ask, hey, are you okay? It was very like emotionally kind of shocking to me, because I guess in my mind expected something different. And then there was another time I did have a seizure at the top of a subway station, and I did go unconscious. So I have no idea whether there could have been a brain injury there or not, because I was by myself. And that can happen to anyone, anytime. There's a lot of who has epilepsy, right? Sometimes you have experiences and maybe you do get a brain injury from falling or some other way. I don't think I did from that particular incident. But just those two to give an example. And then at work, besides the yoga one, I did once have a seizure while teaching ballroom dancing, and I kind of had to go in the back room. That's a lie. I wanted to go in the back room. I didn't have a chance to. It was coming on so fast. So I told my student, because I was teaching someone at the time, please go get the guy at the desk.
Right.
You know, safety. And the guy at the desk, he was a young kid, so he was like trying to clear out the whole room, tell everyone to go away. I was fine. I just sat down. But there was this kind of like stress, mostly from the people around me, like worrying. And for me, I'd rather just have everyone relax and stay calm. But anywhere, right. Like I work in a city, I've always worked, I guess, in cities that are pretty high pressure in all my work. So it's
right.
There's always that stress. And that is for me, the biggest trigger. I don't know if I explained that well and if that's the story you were looking for, but.
Well, no, it does give an insight into how that what an individual already suffering from intractable epilepsy can actually become a patient with post-traumatic epilepsy, depending upon the location of your seizure. I mean, where you mentioned the subway example, God forbid you fell down the stairs during that seizure.
Yeah, that was my first thought. Back up. Get away from
right.
The stairs. That's all I could do.
Right. I mean, I could tell you that how I can relate to that is my last full-blown seizure was in 2005, and I had just come out of the subway station. Everything in the subway looked yellow, everything from my own hands to the subway car to the people. And I had just got out right a block away or two blocks away in the Rockefeller Center area where St. Patrick's Cathedral was. So I was running up the stairs towards St. Patrick's Cathedral across the street there was traffic lights, so there was no oncoming traffic. But as soon as I made it to the steps, I fell into the seizure because I knew it was happening. And I hit my head. I hit my head in the back where it was bleeding and I needed to get staple sutures or whatever they call them in the emergency room. But it was very interesting because I had all the signs and warnings. And thanks to St. Patrick's Cathedral, I always consider that the moment of divine intervention. I was able to get protected by the tourists and the workers that were going by, get me into an ambulance, and then go to Bellevue Hospital, where I simply checked myself out and got treated. But it did notice that since that day, I was getting a lot of forgetfulness side effects, you know, probably because of whatever concussion or I wouldn't call it a post-traumatic issue, but I would just simply say whatever my concussion was reacting to stemmed from, having an injury due to the fall, even though it was a full-blown attack. So that's how I related your subway story, you know?
And I see a statistic here. It says people with head trauma are 12 times more likely to have seizures. So.
Yes. Although what's ironic, though, Jeff, is those were the last seizure. That was the last full-blown seizure I ever had, the one that happened at St. Patrick's Cathedral.
Well, it's very scary to have it in a subway because really you do not want to fall over the platform. So you don't know which way to go. And you don't want to lay down in a really nasty situation. You don't want to run out of the subway because you don't want to run upstairs. So, I mean, it's like nowhere's no man's land.
Yeah,
exactly.
You guys remember that there was a story about that, I think probably 10 years ago now, at least, where the guy had a seizure, fell into the New York City subway train tracks, and some other guy just jumped on top of him and made sure that the two of them were in the middle of the tracks because the train was coming.
I do remember that story. It was amazing.
Yeah.
A little bit of trivia is that that very person who saved that guy ended up on Deal or No Deal and they tried to give him a prize even though he lost the game.
Oh, that's nice, I think.
It was a tribute show. Well, I don't think Deal or No Deal has been on the air for about 10 years now, but I had remembered they had that special episode with that Subway Savior, let's just call him that for the purpose of the conversation. And he was the first of many, because now it became a regular event. So all this talk about Subways and epilepsy, I vow never to take a Subway again unless it's a real emergency. And when I do go, I hold on to the pole, you know, looking to get out as soon as I can, even if I'm only going two stations away, you know. But I can tell you that that's how I got COVID too. I actually caught it from people in the subway on March 11th, 2020, when I ended up with the symptoms after 10 days of incubation. But
the original COVID.
Yeah, the original one that I swear I thought it was the King of Siam or something. So the thing is I went through those delusional dreams. It was ironic that I didn't have any seizure activity. But then I think we all discovered that you don't have to be an epileptic in order to get COVID or vice versa. That was the one comorbidity that was never in question. But either way, the thing is that I do to this day also suffer from partial seizures due to a lesion I got on my brain after repeatedly banging my head while visiting my godson in Miami in 2003. And that's why I take Keppra to this day. But I no longer take the Lamictal for the full blown because I haven't had one in 15 years. So it's very interesting how the majority of cases of epilepsy are epilepsy cases, but the whole nature of post-traumatic epilepsy is something that I think we're going to learn more about in the next segment of Frank About Health through our special guest that arrived, Mr. Jose Dennis, who has a very interesting story that happened to him when he was 10 years old, and that basically the seizures happened years later, went away, and came back again. So that whole story definitely has to be discussed in the next segment because we're about to take a break. So I want to thank you, Danny and Jeff, for helping me outline that epilepsy is predominantly that, epilepsy. But the post-traumatic type are the things that we're learning more about as we go along. It's only been labeled post-traumatic in the medical community over the last, I think, 5 years. You know, but the thing is that when you now see it more common, like on those medical shows like Grey's Anatomy, nobody is immune to having seizures. We want to get that straight because we already know, as we've talked about on our previous episodes, epilepsy is still a stigma, not as much as it used to be, but people should not be stigmatized just because they have seizure activity. The brain, after all, is a powerful computer running on electricity like the way computers do, and sometimes we need to be rebooted.
Yeah, and when it's caused by PTSD, those are psychogenic non-epileptic seizures. So, and the medical community is still figuring that out as well. So that's a form of attack that looks like an epileptic seizure, but is not caused by unusual electrical patterns. So,
correct. All right, so we'll be back right here on talkradio.nyc and all of our social media. So please stay tuned.
Passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to this episode of Frank About Health. As I mentioned before the break, I'd like to welcome Joey, Jose Dennis, as he's properly known, but he has a very interesting case of what we would model post-traumatic epilepsy. And so without further ado, Joey, welcome and tell your story.
Hello, nice to see you. Hi, Ben. My situation was, it goes back when I was 10 years old, January 4th, 1990. I was hit by a van, and the impact caused me to slide across the street.
Joey, can you speak a little louder? We're hearing feedback. Maybe you could talk right into the microphone.
I'm wearing my earphones.
Okay. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Like I was saying, when I was 10 years old, I got hit by a van, which caused me to slide across the street and hit my head against the pole that holds up the train track. And that caused me to be in a seizure, in a coma for 9 days. And after I woke up out of that coma, I was being given Dilantin. And they kept saying that it's a preventive seizure, and so on and so forth. I was in the hospital for 6 months. So I took schooling in the hospital in order to be promoted to the grade. After that experience, when I was in college at the age of 21, which is my third year of college, is when I started getting injured. And it first happened in a dinner room with my family. So that's when I had my first full-blown seizure. And they took me to a Mercy Hospital in the Bronx, and still giving me Dilantin, which never did much for me. I always got seizures with that, and so on and so forth. So it's been an interesting situation. In the year 1997, in October, September around there, I stopped getting the seizures. And from that time until the year January 23rd, 2017, is when they started coming down. But thank God the research has increased so much in the field of epilepsy that I was able to, they gave me the levetiracetam pill, which has thus far prevented me from having seizures.
Well, levetiracetam is the chemical name of Keppra, correct?
That is correct. That is correct. But yeah. Every once in a while, I guess, when I will miss the dose of my pills or something, then, or if a stressful situation arises, is when I get a seizure. But it's been over 10 months that hasn't occurred so far. So,
yes.
So far, the medication is working fine. And,
yes.
I'm trying to keep my level of stress down as much as possible so that that won't occur.
Yes.
So right now I'm in a trip with children who just wanted back home.
Yes.
So I'm in Philadelphia on my way back.
Okay. Well, you know, basically the thing is, it's kind of interesting, Danny, that we've been talking about subways, and what we're here experiencing is Joey on a bus, no less, because, you know, subway versus bus. But the thing is that he was talking about how he was hit by a van, which I hate to put it in the descriptive way, flew him across the street where he banged his head on a pole that holds up the subway tracks. You know, an upper level Bronx, you know, not underground subway, but an upper level subway. And it just basically knocked him out unconscious, was in a coma. I know there was surgical intervention as well to help repair bone damage on the leg and arm. But the thing is that the seizure itself incubated. It didn't happen when he was 10. It happened basically 11 years later. And then to go through 10 years of it and then incubate again and come back 20 years later, that's an interesting pattern that I don't know if neurologists or even people in the field of epilepsy are aware of how those seizures in itself are either activated or reactivated after having been suppressed without medication on top of that. But what's interesting, go ahead.
They look for patterns, and a lot of times brain injuries cause brain inflammation, and brain inflammation contributes to the generation of an individual's seizures and or the transformation of a normal brain into one that generates spontaneous seizures.
Interesting.
That's just my issue. Because
that itself is the definition of epileptogenesis. It's funny that you say you were saying
Yeah. I mean, you know, what we are finding, like, both in...
What I wanted to say is that the area of my brain that was impacted was the left side of my brain. So every time I have a seizure, I'm picking out with my right hand or my right leg. Sometimes I feel like I'm... I've been told that I look like I'm reaching out with my right hand to grab onto something while I'm undergoing the seizure. So it happened on the left side. But the CAT scan, no MRI, no EEG, have pinpointed exactly where it's causing the electrical current to me.
Well, yeah, because what's going on, Jeff, is that he's explaining how the injury occurred on the left side of his head, his arm, and his leg, where all the surgeries occurred, as well as the initial injury, the bang on the head against that subway pole, whatever you want to call it. But the thing is that we all know how the brain works. Anything in the left lobe affects the right side, and the right affects the left. Now, that being said, I think it's easy to diagnose the type of seizure disorder a person has during a seizure if you notice a certain half of the brain or half of the body reacting more dormant or dominant, and therefore it possibly can help those that don't know anything about seizure control or activity when it can be a frightening experience to witness, but yet to be able to do what you can to advocate for the patient, whether they're being diagnosed for epilepsy or understanding that it is seizure activity due to TBI.
Yeah, and I think it's very important for people sometimes that are half conscious during their seizures, if they feel a tingling on one side of the body, they got to mention that to their neurologist, because that might be the foci of their seizures.
Correct. And I mean, according to what I've witnessed with Joey's seizures, they do happen in the full-blown schema. It's not a partial seizure, but it does start with a leaning to the left, a stare and a glaze, and then all of a sudden stuttering into the full-blown attack. So you get to see the pathway as it's kind of exploding throughout the entire circuitry, the motherboard, if you will, you know. But the thing is that what I find, even myself being an epileptic for now going on 40 years or whatever it's been, is that what I've observed his version of epilepsy, or let's just say post-traumatic epilepsy, it's still very interesting to observe and learn from, because on one level, we're only seeing that medications are still the go-to solution for any form of seizure disorder. We don't think that really is the ultimate solution. I'm sure, I know, Danny, you've been researching into basal nerve alterations, whether it's surgical or some other procedures. We've all talked about cannabis, but there has to be some form of control for even those that are not yet born, that I guess the medical profession or the people at the Epilepsy Foundation are trying to continue to research, so that people can understand that whether you're living with epilepsy or post-traumatic epilepsy, it's like there is a solution to it, just like we have found some form of control for something like COVID, which 3 years ago was a complete, you know, what are we going to do about this? You know?
So yeah, and you might ask, why do some people have seizures or migraines after experiencing a head trauma and others don't? And some neurologists would say that there might have been an instability there or a vulnerability there. So that's why someone might start having seizures, or that the head trauma was more severe in one person, or there was maybe bleeding, internal bleeding, or it could be a number of different things.
You know, I guess comparing it to myself with my conscious seizures that affect my left temporal lobe, and I'm conscious throughout them, and I've been able to control them as they're happening. Almost like, okay, assume the position. You're going to go through the roller coaster routine now. You're in the spin cycle of the washing machine. Then you're spending about 3 minutes getting all of your thoughts back in a row, but never finding your sense of unconsciousness. It's like, okay, then there must have been, like you said, bleeding in that area of the brain, which contained it and prevented it from becoming a grand mal attack. Yeah. You know? Post-traumatic epilepsy, I guess, in some ways has always been there, but people didn't identify it as such. They just said, okay, the person is having a seizure, yet they just had brain surgery, yet they just had a concussion, yet they just got hit by a van, in Joey's case. But I think for the epilepsy community, to dub it post-traumatic epilepsy might actually serve the epileptic community well in coming up with better treatments, understanding that seizure disorder is a symptom and not the actual disorder itself.
Yeah, and the people having seizures, the consequences of multiple injuries impact their ability to remember things, recall names, remember facts, speak eloquently, and many other things. So all a person can do is try to keep their mind sharp and memory exercises. And many neurologists have recommended Sudoku or something like that to me. Yes.
Yes. Trying to, you know, do some games with your brain to do recall. I wonder if binge watching is the same thing. I'm just kidding. That all being said, we're about to take our next break. So when we return, we'll spend the remaining 15 minutes pretty much wrapping a summary of post-traumatic versus epilepsy. And thank you for all staying tuned. And we will see you in a few right here on talkradio.nyc and all of our social media.
Hey, everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on talkradio.nyc.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back. And as we wrap up this episode of Frank About Health, we basically, I basically want to just take from all of our guests on the panel some lessons learned so that we could all recommend to those suffering from post-traumatic epilepsy or suffering from epilepsy itself about any kind of issues related to the medications they're taking or what anyone who is trying to explore other solutions in how to live a better quality of life. I figure, Jeff, let's start with you because you also have a book on the subject. So I'd like to know exactly what you want to promote or advocate for those living with epilepsy of the post-traumatic or regular variety.
I was going to tell a story. And since you mentioned the subway, I'll tell a story as an adult, of when I was falling down the stairs, It was in the city streets, and it was near a gym, and like the gym was underground, so you had to go up the stairs to get out of the gym. So I started having my seizure because I was overheated by working out, and my first instinct during an aura is to try to get away from people, or it used to be because, I've lived on the city streets, and usually people mishandle my seizures running out of the gym was my first instinct, which it shouldn't be. It should be just to lay down, have my seizure. But, sometimes you don't always do the right thing, so in your aura. So I ran out of the seizure and I started having, I ran out of the gym and started having a seizure on the stairs, and they were, I could have broken my neck, but it was really bad, it's like one of those big stairwells that you'll see at in Times Square or Penn Station, so it just reminded me of that when we were talking about the subway station.
But I mean, based on that, are you saying that even though you have been living with epilepsy as a child, that you predominantly suffer from seizure of the post-traumatic variety?
Well, I think that because I have refractory epilepsy, I anticipate a certain amount of seizures per month. But I have a head trauma during one of those seizures, that month, then I can, I'll probably have more because, I would say that, like I was talking about the brain inflammation before, it might be a consequence as well as the cause of seizures. So many times it's the cause of more seizures, and it can lead to a bad month for me if I have a bad fall from I hit my head, usually my seizures come in clusters, so that's not the case for everyone, but so I'll have a pretty bad one, but then I'll have say a complex partial after that one, if I started off with a grand mal and I hit my head, so I can expect probably maybe another few, that's how it usually goes.
So your basic takeaway from your own experience is that everyone should be owning the patterns that they have learned to become accustomed to when they know a seizure is coming on, where they need to be, what they have to do to protect not only the people that are in the area, but also themselves from falling down a flight of stairs, God forbid, or even doing what they can to continue the medication and any other special assistance, especially if you are suffering from other symptoms related to the attack, right?
Well, a lot of times, I'll have them right before I go to bed. I'll have them in that that period where you're falling asleep. That's when I'll have a seizure. So what I'll do is I'll get out of my bed when I feel that aura coming on, and I'll move to the floor. So I keep a pillow on the floor of my room, and I keep my room seizure friendly, safety. I try to keep it safe, so no sharp edges around, so because I anticipate that I'm going to have some seizures at night and in my bedroom. So,
What about you, Danny? What would you like to offer the public about how to be mindful, especially with whatever type of epilepsy they're suffering from?
I feel like this all goes to show just how complex epilepsy really is. There's a lot more research to be done. I usually have my seizures at night too, if I have them, although that's changed over the past year. But, I think we all just have to keep looking for new ways, or whatever ways are going to work best for us. So for some people, it's trying different medications. For others, brain surgery or the vagus nerve stimulator is an option. I know we were talking about
nervous
system earlier. And actually, for anyone, I get really into a lot of the holistic stuff, right? I tried yoga and meditation for a while. I still do that. That does help tremendously for me. Mm-hmm. But they are starting to find research about the vagus nerve system being related to, or corresponding to at least, some of the the chakras. That if you're familiar with that, anyone who wants to research that, it's a very interesting rabbit hole to go down. but that's why a lot of this holistic stuff actually does at least work or help. Yes. So I would say we just have to keep looking for what works for us and the people who are on the research end of things, and neuroscientists, all that, doctors, learning. That's what we all have to keep on doing. Got to keep going.
Right.
No, and you're right, Danielle. I mean, everybody, their case is unique, and we're going to touch on that on the 30th. And, really, it's so hard to find patterns when it comes to an epilepsy case. Everybody tries to do it and they wish they can, so.
Yeah.
Right. And you, Joey, what would you say to the listeners and viewers out there, in terms of you being an individual who suffers from post-traumatic epilepsy, would be the advice that you can give to observe their auras, or understand, or not forget to take their medication, or other kinds of techniques to keep themselves as alive as possible, or as aware as possible?
Well, I try to keep stress-free, especially I work in a school, for middle school. So I sometimes separate myself so I can just breathe in slowly and breathe out slowly to calm myself down, not get so hyper and stuff, mm-hmm. and then just talk with the kids and do the best I can. Also, my seizures, I don't have a trigger for it. I don't feel any triggers that some people have, this little electrical current or something. A feeling that they get, it just happens. To me, it just happens.
Interesting.
I never thought, I always try to keep on top of my pills. I'm sure I'm taking my medication every day and not miss a dose. Because I find that when I do miss a dose, it's when I start.
Okay. And so I would say for everybody out there to not only be mindful of your medications, both the generic version. We mentioned an example of levetiracetam, which is Keppra. Lamotrigine is Lamictal. Phenytoin is Nylantin. I think Depakine is Depakote. The point of the matter is, whatever it is, make sure it is the best medication in terms of no sacrifice of the chemical components around it. There's always debate about that, especially if you're taking the generic type. And, of course, that depends on the severity or frequency of your seizure activity. I would say also keep in mind of mental health related issues, depression, anxiety, probably PTSD symptoms, as you said earlier, Jeffrey. Sometimes when you're almost reliving the trauma that you had, it's like allowing your brain to stir the pot and creating seizure activity. So it's just a matter of also shoring up your reserve of doctors, whether there's neurologists, epileptologists, psychiatrists if necessary. Sometimes, for example, the bipolar patients, they were subscribed Lamictal, just like the epilepsy patients. So there could be a correlation for those particular patients. But at the same time, it's just an issue of trying to understand that neurological health and mental health are sometimes in, you know, work together. And in order to emphasize your quality of life, you have to be mindful of all the aspects of your life so that you don't trigger seizures, but at the same time, you also have a way of stabilizing yourself throughout your community. Speaking about community, I'd like to promote tomorrow's slate of shows. We start with Always Friday. Actually, no, we start with Philanthropy and Focus with Tommy D. Then we have Always Friday with Stephen Fry and our new show Intangify with Matthew Asbell. And that's a very interesting guy that's joined our network. He has told me in advance there are a lot of health IP issues that we will be discussing later on Frank About Health over the coming months. At the same time, I want to say that next week, as Jeffrey indicated, we're going to have a wrap up all the epilepsy shows that we have worked on together since December. And we're going to give you all a nice opportunity to see us all live in the summer months. And we'll talk more about that next week. Thank you, Joey, for being here and talking about your case. If you have any questions about Joey's case or Danielle's, myself, or Jeff, you could contact me at frankrharrison1@gmail.com, and I could forward you their information if you would like to reach to them directly. But we are here to be frank about epilepsy right here on Frank About Health. Thanks for staying tuned, and we will see you all next week. Bye-bye.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you on edge? Hey, we live in challenging, edgy times, so let's lean in. I'm Sandra Bargeman, the host of The Edge of Every Day, which airs each Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live with me and my friends and colleagues as we share stories and perspectives about pushing boundaries and exploring our rough edges. That's The Edge of Every Day on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Passionate about the conversation around racism, Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.